There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
The vast majority of people find it difficult to talk about money with partners, friends, or family. At the root of this issue is something called money shame. And to have effective conversations about finances with others, we have to understand money shame and how to overcome it. Today, I'll not only be discussing money shame, but also we'll talk about financial incompatibility, the beliefs you have about money that are getting in your way, and as always, my top tips for moving past all that and finally having effective conversations about your finances with the important people in your life. So stay tuned. I'm Dr. Abby Medcalf, and I'm a practicing psychologist, number one Amazon best-selling author, TEDx speaker, and all-around relationship maven with over 35 years of experience helping people just like you. Join me as I teach you actionable tips and strategies to create connection, joy, and ease in all your relationships. So let's get to it. Welcome back to the podcast. Here I am, Dr. Abby Medcalf. If you're watching me on YouTube, you're watching my fabulous 70s style jumpsuit. Oh, yeah. Well, you can't tell it's a jumpsuit because I'm sitting at the desk, but I'm kind of happening today in my 70s way. Just going to throw that out there. And if you're here on YouTube, please like and subscribe. It helps people find me. And if you're just listening to my melodic voice somewhere else, no matter what you're doing, very glad you're here with me. And we're going to talk about money today. Before I go there, I need to say that I had a little run-in with money myself recently in my relationship with the universe. And I want to warn people that, as you all know, I have my most recent book is called Boundaries Made Easy, Your Roadmap to Connection, Joy and Ease, or Ease and Joy. And, someone stole it and created a workbook. Serene Insights stole my material. They give me credit. They say by Abby Medcalf and all this other stuff. And if you click on it, it says that it's, you know, not authorized and all that, but I don't care. No one said a word to me, and they just took my stuff, slapped it together, and put a workbook on that they're selling. So please do not, I repeat, do not buy that workbook. That is not cool. It is not okay what they did. I will say though, as with all things in life, when you have something that feels very unfair and not good, I thought I should just create my own workbook. So for the, and sell it for less money than them. I didn't like that. So that's what I'm planning to do. Planning to just have a new workbook up there. I've already started it and have it cheaper. That shouldn't be as much money as they're charging anyway. And but please don't buy from them. And if you did, please return it or report. You can report them underneath. It says if there's an issue with this report, if you click on it, please, again, don't buy it. But you could report it and say, I'm a big fan of Abby Medcalf and this is not hers and it's not cool. And that might force Amazon to take it down. Otherwise, it's going to take a long time. And I don't want to hire a lawyer for thousands of dollars to do some cease and desist letter that's still going to take me a long time. So if you're looking to help your girl, Dr. Abby Medcalf, don't buy that damn workbook and please put in a complaint about it if you have the energy or time. Okay. And a last thing before we get started is that I'm going to be speaking mostly about couples today, but I do want to say that all this holds true for anyone seeking to feel, you know, if you're just trying to feel more comfortable with financial conversations with other people or a financial conversation with yourself about why you do what you do with money if you don't feel in alignment, all of this is for you today. So do want to say that if you need to talk to maybe your parents about it or a friend or whatever. So, and I will, it's so amazing to me, you know, whenever I meet with individual clients or couples, I always talk about money at some point. At some point in our conversation, money comes up. And what amazes me is that I am often told that I am the first counselor or coach or whatever that they've ever had who asked about their finances, their budget, or their spending habits. And I think this is a great example of how money is such a taboo subject that even therapists aren't generally asking about it. And when I do, you know, especially with a couple, sometimes it's at the very heart of a lot of their problems, or I shouldn't even say that. It's not especially couples. I have this, I'm thinking of a young woman I worked with. She was pretty young and she, you know, was really in debt with a car. You know, she was trying to kind of keep up with the Joneses, so to speak. And so she was buying things she couldn't afford. Her money was really upside down and it was a huge stressor to her. And she was having to work all these hours trying to pay off these things. And she didn't have savings and her credit rating wasn't good. You know, it was very stressful. If I had never asked about money, she wouldn't have talked about it because of money shame, which we'll talk about today. And also, I think because we're so used to not discussing money unless it's with a financial planner. And for people who don't have money, they don't want to go talk to a financial planner. So it really becomes something that isn't discussed. I think I've always thought Susie Orman, the author, does a really good job with talking about how money is so emotional and, you know, what's behind all that. You know, her books always grab onto that, which I think is really great. So, and I want to be clear, it's not like I'm doing financial planning with my clients, but to not discuss money seems just insane to me. Again, it's a huge stressor to a vast majority of the people I've ever worked with. And let me just say this, I work with very wealthy people often, and they have all the same issues as far as it becoming problematic in their life and relationships as people with no money or little money, because this money shame thing and the beliefs we have about money and what we hold about money, you can have a relationship that's just as screwed up as anybody else if you're a millionaire or, you know, living paycheck to paycheck. So, and by the way, I've worked with millionaires living paycheck to paycheck because, again, people get weird with money. So I really just want to say that. And I know you're like, well, I'd rather be crying in my Lamborghini than in my, you know, Hyundai. But just I'm not saying that, you know, it's not good to have money. I'm not that person, but I'm just saying, believe it or not, lots of people have issues with money and that they bleed into the relationship with the people in their lives. So I want to say that. And I always write up these and then I do some research and I saw a survey and, you know, I always link to all the research on the website. I saw a survey that said that almost 65% of couples said that they're financially incompatible with their partner. Think of that, 65%. It was 64%, I think was the exact number I saw. So almost 65% said they're not money compatible with their partner. How can that not cause strife and issues that have nothing to do with how much money you have? People hide money or purchases. They lie about their debt or feel resentful that their partner isn't pulling their weight or contributing fairly. You know, people have a lot of ideas about what should and shouldn't be. So, okay, so let's start by talking about money shame. Let's get into money shame. When couples try to discuss money, there's often blame, defensiveness, and at its root, it's due to something called money shame. And how much you earn, what you've spent in the past, you know, what you've spent your money on in the past, your debt, not having savings or retirement, or even the fact that you're still spending above your means, all add up to feeling shame about money in our lives. And by the way, having a ton of money, you can also have a lot of money shame. It maybe you come from a family that didn't have any money, and now you have money and you feel guilty about it, or you don't feel like you wonder, should I pay for everybody? Should I not? I think for any of us who grew up, I'm making more money than my parents ever did. And I didn't grow up with money. So deciding how to parent my kids around money, who should get money in the family, you know, how do you help people when they ask if you have the means to help, or you're just supposed to help? You know, there's so many things that are very hard. And again, people don't like to talk about it. And there's entitlement around money and all kinds of stuff. So, and there was a really great TEDx by this she's an author and money coach. Her name is Tammy Lally, Lally, that I really liked. And I'll link again to it in the on the website on this page. But she said, what I've learned is that our self-destructive and self-defeating financial behaviors are not driven by our rational, logical minds. Instead, they're products of our subconscious belief systems, rooted in our childhoods and so deeply ingrained in us that they shape the way we deal with money our entire adult lives. And so many of you are left believing that you're crazy or stupid or just bad with money. And this is what she calls money shame, this intensely painful feeling or experience of believing that we're flawed and therefore unworthy of love or belonging based on our bank accounts, our debts, our homes, our cars, or our job titles. The TEDx is very good. So let's talk about the money beliefs holding you back. Okay? Here are what I believe are the biggest money beliefs holding you back. This money shame shows itself that I guess that's my point, in beliefs that we carry from, again, childhood into adulthood about money. What we don't realize is that there isn't sort of one right way to be with money. It's all about preferences and these, again, kind of unconscious beliefs. Sometimes they're even conscious beliefs, but they're so integrated that we don't question them. We assume they're true because we've had them our whole lives. So let me get into a few of the top ones that I find the most problematic. One that comes up a lot, it's really interesting with couples I work with, or individuals who are in a couple or have been, is that there's this belief that you have to combine your money or you're setting yourselves up for a breakup or a divorce. And as the younger generations come up, which is great, there's, I think, less and less of that. But it was really common in previous generations to have one account. And of course, this was because, you know, it grew out of the fact that women weren't even allowed to have their own credit cards until 1974 here in the U.S. I don't know what that is in other countries, but, and often women weren't working outside the home. So like when I was born, women couldn't have credit cards or get their own divorces. I mean, craziness, right? So there was one income and men usually decided how it was spent. And now things are different now. And although many couples, you know, still have joint accounts, others keep separate accounts. And some couples I've worked with have both. There's no one right way to do it. And I really want to say that. You can do whatever you want as long as it's fair and doesn't create resentments. So in other words, everyone needs to agree, not just the person making the money or making the most money. Everybody needs to be on tap with this. And I'll talk about that more in the tips. Belief number two that I find gets in the way a lot is this idea that it's your debt. So, you know, these days people are getting married or getting into relationships later, into kind of long-term relationships later, and more women are going to college now, right? So many individuals come into a marriage or a long-term relationship with student loan or credit card debt or housing debt or other things. And individuals in a couple think, I see this all the time, it's the other person's debt. And why should I be responsible for decisions they made about money before we got together? And the problem with this is that it creates inequity within the relationship as well. But more importantly, there's this separate approach to money and life right from the get-go, right from the get-go. If you're looking to build your life with someone and even thinking of having children with them, this mine and theirs mentality, it's going to keep showing up and create more and more distance and resentment between the two of you. And I'll give you this example. Let's say you get in a relationship with someone who already has a child. Well, that was a decision they made before you. Would you have nothing to do with that kid? I mean, they made that decision before you got together. Why should I have anything to do with it? Or if you got with someone who made really smart financial decisions for you together and they had, I don't know, homes and all kinds of money, wouldn't you expect your relationship to be made better by that? Would you really expect that, like, let's say you make almost nothing, that you wouldn't move into a house? Like, what would happen? Would you always live separately? Would you live a pauper lifestyle where they were living this, you know, very expensive lifestyle? Would you not go to the same restaurants together? It makes no sense when you put it into other, when you take it out of that one context and put it into other things. So this idea of debt, because it's affecting you anyway. This idea that it doesn't, well, it's their debt, they have to deal with it. I don't know what you're thinking. It doesn't work that way. Because if your partner now has to work extra hours to pay off this debt, then you're having less resources in your relationship anyway. Hello? They're not there as much. You're probably arguing more about things because you don't see them as often. Or they're taking their money to pay off this thing. Again, it makes no sense. I don't know. I've been doing this almost 40 years. I have to tell you, there's a real problem when I can see the difference when I have couples get to a point where they realize that if you're going to commit to this person, like if this is it for you, if you're trying to really make this long-term and you're thinking this is my person forever, then you got to think about this stuff. Now, if you have a different idea about relationships, I have no issue with that. I do not judge. You don't have to think they're forever. It's okay with me. Understand then that there's going to be some separations between you. Understand that there's going to be some separations that you just have to be able to talk really well about and converse about. So it's always about, you know, how you talk about these things. And I've talked over and over, and I even covered it in my own TEDx, The Real Reason Relationships Fail. I've talked so much about the importance of being a team. No matter what else you do in a relationship, it has to be a team. There are no you problems or me problems. Everything is a shared we issue because you're a shared resource. So instead of thinking it as his debt, think of it as our debt. Brainstorm how you're going to pay it off together. Yeah, it might only come out of, I don't know, his paycheck, but you still have to brainstorm what that's going to mean in the couple, how that's going to happen so that there's still equity, there's still an equitable arrangement in the couple. And it feels so good for the person not to feel alone with this debt. If her debt is really this big a deal, then maybe that's a deal breaker and you shouldn't be together. But if you've got the person of your dreams in front of you, for me, I think you're crazy to let something like money get in the way. And I do want to give just one caveat here. We know that when long-term relationships happen, especially those that have kids, when they break up, women are much worse off financially every time. That's across the board. That's in different countries. It doesn't matter where you are. And so I'm not saying that you shouldn't prepare. You should prepare anyway. There's going to be an end to your relationship. There's going to be an end. One of you is going to die or you're going to break up. So no matter which of those, there should be a very clear money path on the other side. Again, but do that as a couple. Do that together. Talk about it together. I can't tell you how many widows I've met. You know, he dies, and or worse, I had somebody I worked with, he was in a coma, non-responsive coma, and the money was a mess. She couldn't access it. She didn't know what was going on. She didn't have access to the accounts. She wasn't on the accounts. I mean, you've got to think about these things, not just if someone dies, but what if someone is in a coma and can't, you know, like what happens? Do you have passwords for the accounts? Do you know where the money is? Do you know how to access it? Do you have long-term disability together? Do you know where how to access that? Like, you've got to get, and I'll talk about that in the tips, but you need to plan. That's all. So you should plan for everyone's financial future. That's wonderful. But if you're only planning for separate financial futures, you just have to know that that's going to impact the couple. It doesn't have to impact it negatively, but you've got to think about it. You've got to think about it. Okay. You can't just pretend it's not there. And it shouldn't be this idea of, well, your debt and mine, or even your kids. Like, I don't know. It would be very hard for me. You know, Gary and I both had children coming into our relationship. And I get that, you know, they have a mom. I'm the bonus mom. I get that with Gary's kids, but I take, you know, an active role in loving them and what that means, and building my relationship with both his boys. And he's like that with my kids. You know, he takes an active role in being a parent. You know, they already have a dad, a wonderful father my kids have. So he doesn't have to, but he's like a bonus, right? It's like a bonus idea there. But I can't imagine if I just was like, well, I don't know. You know, Gary has a severely autistic son, and that's been, you know, that's a lot of planning and a lot of thinking about, and where does that money go and what happens? What happens to his money and his kids and my money and my kids? You know, all those things. But you talk about it. You lay it out there. You decide together, what do we think we want on the other side? What are our goals together? Which, again, I'll get to in my tips. So, you know, I think I want to say that in the end, money isn't the thing that's going to make for a happy life. The research backs me up on this. It's the quality of our relationships. It's the quality of the person you choose. And it's been said over and over that the person you choose as your partner has more to do with the quality of your happiness than almost anything else. That relationship, that primary relationship. So if you're already in there like, oh, that's your problem. Good luck. That's an issue. Okay. So, and if you can't find a way to solve this issue together, you're going to have troubles figuring out future problems as a team. I promise you, there is no one I've ever worked with who were in that his debt, my debt, or whatever, and didn't talk about it and were like, take care of it, good luck, and who didn't have issues in the relationship. That's why I saw them. And I would always bring it back to this. And I can tell you that the couples I worked with who found some peace around this, who are doing the things I'm telling you to do, oh my gosh, the relationships improved tenfold. If you're really, it's so funny, I think sometimes we're hedging our bets, you know, well, I want to have money just in case we break up, but the very things you're doing are going to cause you to break up. And then you're like, oh, thank God I saved that money, because otherwise, you know, and you can have money in a strong financial future while still working at it as a couple. That's what I really want to make clear. I hope I am. Okay. Hope I'm being crystal clear here. Belief number three, labeling. Oh, I see this all the time. Like this belief that somebody's good with money and someone's bad with money, that people can be good or bad with money. I hear this one a lot. You know, she's not good with money. He's a spender. I'm a saver. And this, getting past this idea that people are right or wrong, you know, when you're in a relationship is really important. The deal is nobody's right or wrong. You just find different things important. By the way, everyone's a spender. Everyone. It's just what you spend on. It's just how much you spend. But everybody's a spender, so I don't want to hear that. Everybody's a spender. There's no one who's listening right now or who you've ever met who hasn't spent a dollar somewhere or a shekel or a euro or something. Give me a break. Like, of course, people spend money, right? You just spend on different things, and then you judge what that means based on how you were raised and what you believe about money. There's that money shame again. And then as you are shaming to your partner, if you're a saver and you label yourself at that and this spender, and you're doing that and you're fighting around that, what you're doing is not accepting your partner for who they are. Either both ways, usually. The other person, the quote-unquote spender often says the other person is stingy and not living for life or whatever. You start to label each other. You start to decide what's right and what's wrong. The key is to figure out a budget that works for both of you. That's, if you're a team, that's the idea. There's times on a team, you know, a basketball team where there's somebody who's, you know, always do... you know, I got to go baseball. I don't know anything about basketball. I know about baseball, but you know, there's someone maybe who always hits the home runs, but maybe, you know, you got to put them at first base because they don't have a glove, you know, there's different things we all bring to the team. You know what I mean? And deciding that one thing is bad and one thing is good. If all you think is that, well, if you don't have a glove, you suck at baseball, that's not true. You know, if you could be a pitcher or a hitter or just have a glove and not be a good hitter. There's a lot of ways, but what you do is you bring the resources of the team together and you problem solve how best to do that. Oh, Pete Alonso better be on first base. You know I'm talking about the Mets. Just leave me alone. You know I love my Mets. But you know what I'm saying? Like, you have to decide where that person is best. We're not putting him in center field, you know? That's the deal. That's what I'm saying. It all comes back to, again, what you believe about money in general. Some people see money as a means to feel safe, to feel secure. I will tell you that my wonderful Gary, that's how he sees money. He is all about saving every penny whenever he can. He's very generous in a lot of wonderful ways, but he, like, to him, it's about the security. If something is still good, why would you buy new? If you could buy $50 sneakers, why would you buy $150 sneakers? Like, he's just, that's him. That's who he is. There's nothing wrong with how he is. If you've seen me or met me, you know that ain't me. I'm bougie as hell. I have a very different feeling about it. I see money as a tool for experiencing my life to the fullest. That's how I see it. So I'd rather do different kinds of travel and buy different kinds of things. And yeah, I'll buy the $150 sneakers pretty easily. You know what I mean? I'll spend money on a bag that he finds outrageous for him. But we've come to a place where we can talk about these things and not judge them. Doesn't mean he agrees. It doesn't mean he thinks it's a good idea to buy a designer bag or something. But he loves and accepts me for who I am. And this is something. So how do we, now, if I was spending my grocery money on that, we might have a different conversation, right? If I, you know, if there was something really bad happening from that, or if I was maybe so far out in how I like to spend my money differently than him, then there might, you know, you do have to find some common ground. You have to find somewhere that you sort of come together. And we do, we have a lot of those places. But I'm just saying, you can be very different. I would say Gary and I have very different money styles. That's how I talk about it. We do. And we definitely converge in certain areas, and everybody does. But believe it or not, even when you're very different, there's a few little threads generally where you kind of hit on that are together. But again, neither person is right or wrong. It's all about your beliefs, these money beliefs. It's about any money shame you have, and it's about your preferences. I believe number four that I see getting in the way a lot of couples is this idea that, you know, what they don't know can't hurt them. And this has to do with hiding money in a relationship. It's much more common than you think. I see it a lot in different ways. It's not always like hiding assets. It's usually, you know, lying about how much something costs so your partner doesn't get upset. I've done it. I'm not going to lie. I've taken the price tag off the block of Parmesan Reggiano cheese. You know, Gary, food isn't important to Gary. He knows what we like spend. You know, it's not like it's a secret, the bigger spending, but I know if he opened the drawer all the time and saw, you know, $20 on this, on the wrapper of this cheese, it would just be irritating to him every time. Why do that? You know? So yeah, I've taken the wrapper off. Maybe not as much now, but I have, you know, or yeah, spending more money on shoes. I remember I bought him a pair of sneakers once that were like $125, I think, or something. And he was upset about it. He just thinks it's crazy. Like, there's just, so people lie often. And we didn't about that, but I let him know. And that's why he was upset. But, you know, it would have been easy just to lie, right? So you really have to be careful of that. Other times I've seen people like not telling their partner they worked overtime. And then having some extra money, you know, that feeling like, well, I work the extra hours, so it's really my choice what to do with it. Or it could be something big as hiding assets. You know, I'll just keep this little nest egg separate so I have some insurance kind of thing. Keeping money secrets in a relationship just undermines it, pure and simple. I don't know, again, because it's not a team. Underneath in the fabric here, you don't have your partner's best interest at heart, right? That's one of the pieces of trust is goodwill, that you have their best interest at heart. You have your own best interest at heart. And I'm not saying your own best interest shouldn't be in the picture, but be honest about it. Have a conversation so people are all on the same page. If your partner doesn't like something, you need to find an agreement and budget for it, like I did with the cheese. These conversations are key. Like, this is what it's about, to having an open, emotionally close relationships. Secrets around money create distance, pure and simple. And belief number five is the idea that we're equals, so everything should be split 50-50. And you have to remember that equality and equity are two different things. So if you're making 30% more money than your partner, then I don't think they should be responsible for 50% of the household bills. So this idea of like splitting bills, I think needs to be more on a percentage basis or some other term that feel equitable, not equal. Also, being the sole breadwinner or being the one who physically pays the bills doesn't mean you get to make all the decisions. So you're still equals when it comes to deciding how to spend the money earned in this household. If you don't want to share your money and the power and control that comes with that, then I don't know that you want to share much else. Again, it's really undermining where the two of you are. And again, if you really talk about it and you decide things together and everyone's happy, I mean really truly content and satisfied with the arrangement, then I got no issue. But what I see is that people say, and they nod their head, and really because of their own money shame and they feel like they don't deserve this other money, the other person did earn it after all, they start to get into the shame about money, and or a lot of this has to do with misogyny and this built-in patriarchy. I say with love to all my male listeners, but it's the truth. So this idea that we've had for so long, which still holds true in households, that women do more work at home, definitely do more of the childcare. Men have upped all that as far as the numbers go tremendously in the last 30 years, but it went from zero to something. So yeah, it's gone up a ton, but it's still, we know still that women are doing more at home, even when they work. We know this. Every research shows it. So you got to get clear that that's still going on. So and we do know that when there's children at home, men do tend to work more outside the house. That's true too. Yep. That bears out in the, Pew Research Center, Reuters. When you look at any of the surveys and research that they collect, you can see that that's true. But again, it doesn't, when we start talking about, the emotional labor of the home, women still have so much more of that and that bandwidth. So it's really, it's so hard when you try to get equitable. You certainly can't get equal, trust me. But even being equitable, that's a hard thing. So, you've got to talk about what this is. I had a client, not that long ago, who had a large inheritance that she lived off of. She lived off of this inheritance. And her partner, when they had a talk about, he wasn't working. And, my client had a lot of mental health issues. And I was concerned about her because she was giving a ton of money to this man that she married, and he wasn't working. He was hanging out and he really didn't have much going on. And of course, I was concerned about maybe why he married her or whatever. And her self-esteem was so low, and I was concerned about this money just getting eaten through. So what I talked to her about was, really pushing her to really talk to her financial planner about how to draw like a salary from that. And if that's what they live on, great. I said to her, that's fine, but he wanted all to start these businesses and use more money from the inheritance to start them. Like, there was all this stuff. And I said, you got to have a budget and you have to make sure that you have enough money for the two of you for the rest of your lives. If none of these like great business ventures work out, like you have to look at that. And that helped a lot, and she did. And she went and talked to her guy and her financial planner was a female. And the planner really helped them come up with a plan. And that's okay. And if he's using her, he's using her. I don't, but maybe he's not. Maybe he's very altruistic. I don't really know. I didn't meet him. So all I know is you have to be smart about the whole thing. Whether someone's using you or not, or they're not using you, it doesn't matter. You still can't just go, woo, you know. You have to think, if we live until we're 95, is there enough money to live the way we want to live till then? And then look at any surplus and how we'd like to spend it together, right? That it's still the same thing at the end of the day. I just want to say that. And I also want to say that if you live together versus being married, your rights are different. So at least here in the States, and I'm not actually sure of that in other countries, so people can leave comments below the video if it's different, but on YouTube, you know, here in the United States, you don't have the same protections you do if you're married. So if you, even if you've kind of common law and lived together a long time, so you do have to think of those things, but again, it should all be out on the table. No secrets, no hiding. So let's talk about, now let's talk about tips and troubleshooting. So we can have these effective.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Conversations when it comes to finance. So as I said earlier, it's really rare for a couple to have exactly the same financial goals or even the same ideas about what to spend and what to save. There was another survey I saw of these financial advisors in the UK where they said that more than a third of the couples said that the biggest reason for tension between them, I'm sorry, the financial planner said it about the couples they work with. They said the biggest reason for tension between couples during financial planning meetings was a disagreement over lifestyle goals. And this is why getting to those beliefs, bringing them out into the light of day is so darn important and why I can't say enough about it. Okay. So how do you set those important conversations up for success? All right. I've got a few tips. Tip number one, and this is what I've been preaching over and over through this whole thing, is that you have to be transparent. It's important to put all your cards on the table as early in the relationship as possible, but it's never too late. I don't care if you've been married 20 years and this is all coming up. I don't care if you've been dating 3 years and moved in and didn't ask a question. Now's your time. It's very important to be clear about your expectations, your wants, and where your finances stand. So I want you to ask questions like, again, it'd be great during dating or when, you know, not the first date, but when you start to become more serious, what's important to you when it comes to money? Actually, I don't even mind that question on a first date. Fuck it. Like, you know, if that's something that's really, if you're a little older now, or I don't even care. You could be young and ask it. Maybe not the first date, but, you know, soon. If I remember when I started dating seriously, when I thought I wanted to have kids and get married for the first time, I thought those were things I said right away because I didn't want to waste my time. I didn't want to sit around. So if I was talking to someone who didn't eventually, I'm like, we don't have to get married tomorrow or anything, nor do I want to, but I want to know that that's something that is important to you. I don't know why I had marriage in my head. I just did. I felt like I wanted to. And I had kids in my head. I think that's why, because I felt somehow like they went together. They don't need to. Please don't. If you don't, they really don't need to. Just where I was at the time. Okay. So that was something I asked and that my kid's dad said yes to, you know, so we could continue. But we did ask the money questions early, right? What's important to you when it comes to money? How do you most like to spend your money is one of my favorite dating questions. Hey, how do you like to spend your money? Like, what gives you joy around money? how do you decide what to save? That's a good way to figure out how they problem solve a budget or not a budget or whatever, or that they have no savings. Again, it can be fine to have no savings for you, that you might not care about that either, but you should know. How much debt do you have? I'd want to know. Are there any assets? Do you own a home? How much debt is on that home or condo or whatever, or cars? That was always one of the first things. I'm a New Yorker. I don't care about cars at all. Zero care about cars. I have no, I drive a 2009 car and I will drive that thing till it dies. I love not having a car. Like, I don't believe in car payments. You have this thing that is depreciating in value that you're paying interest on. I think it's insane. I don't understand. My daughter, we had her buy her own car and it's an old car. And because she had to pay cash, there was not going to be a loan. You know, it's like, like, this is how we do it in our family around cars. And you might think like, well, geez, Abby, if you buy a designer bag, you know, how could you do that and not have a nicer car? It's because for me, there you go. Here's something that matters and here's something that doesn't. And my bag is going to go up in value over time and I can sell it for at least for what I bought it for or something very close. Whereas this, if I take good care of it, whereas this thing is not. And so for me, that's what matters. For me, it might not matter to you. You might just feel like your car is the most important thing in the world, but that is something I cared about. I wanted to see because I knew I'd be in a lot of money alignment with someone who had the same ideas about cars as I did. It was one of those things I knew right away how they would feel about things. And it was fine. And I dated guys with new cars, you know, it was fine. It was very nice to drive around in, but we talked about those kind of things. And again, if you have more money than God and you want to have a new car all the time, God bless you. I don't have any issue with that. But for someone who makes $50,000 a year and has a $70,000 car, I'm like, what you doing? You know, that isn't somebody I would want to get in a relationship with for me, because I would find that like, what's going on? And I would think maybe, you know, I'd have judgment about it. I would ask questions because I don't want to judge, but I would have questions. Do you have a budget is a good question to ask. You know, hey, do you have a budget? Like, how do you do that? If not, how do you decide on spending and saving without a budget? What do you expect from a partner when it comes to money? How has money worked in the past in your relationships? How do you think about that? I would also watch, you know, I'm a big watcher on how people tip. I worked in the service industry pretty much my whole childhood into adult beginnings of in my 20s. And so I tended bar, I waitressed, which I think, by the way, everyone should have to do. And so I'm a good tipper, and I watch how people treat janitors and front desk people and waiters and waitresses and bartenders. I watch closely when I was dating how people treated those people. That to me was a big tip off, and how they tipped and what that looked like. And you don't have to be the biggest tipper in the world, but I'm saying, like, how do you think about money in relationship to other things? You know, what do you do when we go on vacation? How did that work? All those things. Really, really important. So that's tip number one. Tip number two is something I've said 100 times. I'll say it again right here, is when you have these money conversations, don't sack, ask questions. So when you want to have any type of money conversation, it's the same to me as having any kind of conversation about your sex life. You have to be prepared and open. Sex and money are very hot topics, right? For many people and many couples. And I think it's because most people don't allow themselves to get really vulnerable when they have these conversations. Instead, shame is at the helm. It's led by shame, and that results in a ton of defensiveness and anger and sadness and fighting and all this stuff, right? It's the money shame again. So you have to go into the conversation with the following ideas, okay? So the don't sack, don't, remember SAC, don't sack. Don't offer suggestions, give advice, or criticize. I know. Don't offer suggestions, give advice, or criticize. You're going to ask questions instead, which I'll do that in a minute. I want you to go in the conversation. Here's really the top thing. Let me do that, and then I'll go to the sacking again. You want to go into any conversation about money trying to learn something, not prove something. If you're going in to prove, like, you're doing it wrong and here's the right way, you're screwed. If you're going in trying to learn, like, why does this person think this way? Tell me more about how you grew up with money. What was your dad like around money? Did you ever get an allowance growing up? What'd you get the allowance for? Find out what they believe. Find out what they think about money. And what you believe is, the proof is always in the pudding. I can tell what anybody believes about money by how much money they have in a lot of ways, like what's around them, how they treat money. I remember dating, this is a long time ago, but I remember dating a woman who, she used to throw money in this, in her bag, like just throw it. It was very weird. Like, she didn't have a wallet. She was kind of disrespectful with her money. It's the only way I could think to say it. Like, I'm always facing my money and having it nice and neat in my wallet, very arranged. You know, the bills are in descending order. I'm so funny about it. I always like to have cash. I just have a thing, like, you have to have cash just in case. I used to only pay with cash, and then the pandemic sort of changed that into where you know, a lot of places don't take cash anymore. So that did shift. But, you know, again, it depends. That's a money thing for me, you know, but you want to really, you got to be open going in. If someone was going to talk to me and was like, well, that's just stupid to pay with cash, because it's so much smarter to put it on a credit card and then, you know, get miles or improve your credit or whatever, right? It is. That makes more sense. I come from my background with more of a poverty mentality and fear around that stuff. I had parents who declared bankruptcy a couple times at least. And so I'm afraid of credit cards. I get scared of those things. So do you know, and I'm not saying it's right the way I do it. I'm saying I have a reason. There's money emotionality attached. And sometimes, even when you know the reason, and even when you know it's not the smartest, most financial way to go, it still makes me feel safe and secure to do it the way I do it. So that's how I do it. I don't know that, you know, I don't know. I've done a lot of work on myself. I'm not sure I'm going to go crazy on this particular thing. And that's okay. It's okay for me and it's okay for you. But you got to be aware. I am aware of it. I'm aware of it. I check those things. We talk about them. So go in to learn something, not prove something. I don't try to convince Gary or my kids or anyone else that what I do is the right way. I try to explain to them actually why I do it the way I do it, so they can have a better understanding of me. And maybe they would have some great input that would let me change my mind about it. I don't know. It's great. So, you know, do better there. The other thing is to check your own beliefs at the door, kind of what I'm already saying. You have to go in with the idea that your way of dealing with money isn't any more right than your partner's or your dad's or whoever else's. And then, of course, is the don't sack. Don't offer suggestions, give advice, or criticize when you're having these conversations. And instead, you want to ask collaborative questions. I know I talk about them a lot. Can you tell me more about that? If this was a great money conversation, what would I say first? What would I say last to you? Right? Anything like that. And you really want to listen like you're wrong to these in these conversations. I want you to try to identify and discuss any money shame or beliefs that are holding you back, okay? And then I really want you to listen to episode 124 of this way back, that must have been season 2, maybe 3, how to listen without getting defensive or hurt. So you can look up that title, you can come to the website, episode 124, you can search for it, do whatever you want. But that in that episode, I detail my 7-step process for having an effective conversation with tricky subjects just like this. So I don't want to repeat all that here. I'm always trying to give different information. Otherwise, I'd just be repeating myself every broadcast, and every broadcast would take 7 hours. So go back, listen to that one. It's very definitely one of the more popular episodes I've ever done. And to me, it's a 101, communication 101 thing that you should have in your pocket. But that will really help you set up for the effective conversation. I'm giving you some broad brush strokes. That is going to give you the nitty gritty. And then my last tip, which is a nitty gritty, is start having a monthly financial meeting. It's really important to sit down together to create a budget, to work from a budget, and then review your budget and your savings plan month to month. It's really critical for creating a feeling of being a shared resource, being a team as you approach your finances in your relationship. When you sit down each month and you go over your budget and your goals, like, what are our shared goals? You're going to find yourself collaborating as a couple. And there was another large survey, again, I'll link to in the show notes, that showed that couples who make their financial plans together fare much better than couples where one person is in charge. Not only do they get along better and report higher satisfaction, but they're more likely to have money left at the end of the month and are more likely to save money. I know, how do you like that? Kind of amazing. Now, I have a fabulous little gift for you. I have a monthly financial meeting outline that I give to my clients when I assign this. And so you can come on over to the website, abbymedcalf.com. You can come to either the show notes page, which is like the podcast page, or you can go to the relationship tips and tools, which is the blog page. And there will be a link to the monthly financial meeting outline. And you can download that. To be completely transparent, because that's how I operate. When you download it, you will be on, you'll put in your email and we will send it to you. And then you will be on my weekly love letter list. And I need to tell you, people, if you like my podcast at all, you will love the love letter. I don't sell things from the love letter. It's not a sales thing. I know people are so jaded by weekly emails that you're just like, I don't do anything more than once a week. I don't bombard your mail, your thing. Like when my books come out and stuff, once or twice a year, something new comes out, I let you know. But that's even in that weekly thing. I don't do a bombardment of 20 other emails about it. I let you know when things are happening like that, when there's something I think will help you. But other than that, it's my little stories about the world, about what I think will help motivate you, inspire you for that week, something to think about differently for the week. So I would love it, you know, to me, and I do it because I love you. And I feel like the more touch points we have like this, you know, maybe you're watching me on video right now and you have that this week. And then on Wednesday mornings that, or wherever it might come, whatever time of day it might come for you, depending on where in the world you live. Shout out to all my people in other countries who listen. Whatever time you get it, it's just another thing you can read. It takes 5 minutes. I don't write some big long thing to just help you hopefully feel inspired or motivated or thinking differently about your life. And that's all it's meant to be. There's no sleazy other thing. And if you don't like it, unsubscribe. There's thousands of people on there. I'm not going to notice. You're not going to get a black mark on your record. It's okay. And also know whenever you put your email in for something, if you're already on that list, you won't be getting multiple. Like we know, we unless you're using a different email, we know it's you. So no worries. You won't get something extra, you know, other than the thing you asked for. That's all you'll get. I hope that was good for you today. I'm going to do another, just a quickie on, somebody asked a question about when someone's not pulling their weight. So with financially, and I wanted to address that separate. So I'm going to do a little separate thing on that. But this is it for today. Talking about money, I think it's really important. I really do. And hopefully I've answered a lot of your thoughts about it. But what I mostly want you to take away is that when you have money shame, you have to address it. You have to figure out what those beliefs are, and you have to address the shame so that you can enter into a relationship feeling fully yourself, fully accepted, and fully loved, which you greatly, greatly deserve. All right. Well, know that I love you. I'm so glad you're here with me. It's the highlight of my week, getting to do this with you. All right. Mwah. Have an amazing week, and I'll talk to you real soon. Thank you for listening to the Relationships Made Easy podcast with wonderful me, Dr. Abby Medcalf. And I've got two quick things to say. Just give me one more minute. First, I love spending this time with you, and I work hard to make sure every single episode is going to help you move from any feelings of frustration or resentment or anxiety to that connected, hopeful confidence. That's always my goal. So if you have any ideas for a future episode or just want to say hi, let me know what the podcast is doing for you. Anything. You can email me at abby@abbymedcalf.com. How simple is that? And the second thing I want to say is if you like the podcast, you're going to go crazy, crazy for my book. My book is really good. I'm really proud of it. You can find it on Amazon or on my website under the shop section on my website at abbymedcalf.com. It's called Be Happily Married, Even If Your Partner Won't Do a Thing. And even if your partner will do a thing, the book will still really help you. So that's it. Thanks again for listening. Talk to you soon.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.